Peace, friends. My name's Tom. I'm the pastor here at Sycamore Creek. I'm so glad you are here with us today as we continue this series, The Year of Small Things. We're looking at small commitments, small practices that we can make each month throughout a year that add up into some pretty big change. Today, I want to talk about hospitality. Now, last week, my wife, Sarah, kicked off the series talking about covenantal friendship and discernment with friends. This book, The Year of Small Things, is a book that Sarah and Aaron Wassinger wrote together. Aaron's here in the front row, or the third row. The covenantal friendship that our families have shared over the last year or so in exploring making small changes. One of the things that Sarah described as a metaphor for understanding friendship and discernment is a GPS. You all have a GPS in your phone, right? You know what I'm talking about. And a GPS requires three satellites at the minimum to get a lock on where you're at and for you to know where you're going. The more satellites that you have, the more accurate that information is. And so when you're asking, where is God leading me? The more satellite inputs you have that are lining up, the more clear God's direction becomes. So you're participating in one of those inputs right now. You're participating in worship, but another is reading scripture or covenantal friendship in a small group or experience and circumstances. These are all things that are like the satellites that line up. And I want to share with you a time when all the satellites in my life lined up and pointed in a really clear direction. Sarah and I, when we first got married, lived up in Petoskey, Michigan. We were attending Petoskey United Methodist Church. Actually, we were both on staff there working for the church. And one of the things that I did was I led a Bible study called Disciple Bible Study. And it's a 34-week Bible study. It starts in Genesis and it works all the way through Revelation. It doesn't cover the entire Bible, but it's most of it over 34 weeks. And when we got to the book of Luke, it was a physician who wrote a story about Jesus' life. He collected stories of Jesus' life and put them all into two different books. Luke and Acts were both written by Luke. And when we got to Luke, I noticed something about Jesus. In fact, I think it was because Luke was a physician that he noticed how Jesus particularly treated people who were hurting, people who needed healing, people who were poor and didn't have money for doctors, and so on. And Luke spends a lot of time paying attention to how Jesus pays attention to the people on the fringes of society. So there's satellite number one, reading the Bible, noticing who Jesus is paying attention to. The second satellite was that right around that time, Sarah and I bought a little house. And here's the first house that we owned. Actually, as I think about it, it's the only house that we own because we live in a parsonage that you all own and we get to live there. This house, this was BC, before children in our life. So it was 1,500 square feet. It seemed enormous to us. I mean, we had three bedrooms. What do two people need three bedrooms for? And then we had a living room and a dining room and, you know, the utility room and kitchen and all, you know, it was a lot of space. It felt on some level like we were wearing XXX clothing. We didn't even have enough furniture to furnish the house when we moved in. So that's the second satellite. The first satellite was Disciple Bible Study, reading Luke, noticing who Jesus pays attention to. The next one was we bought this house. We had lots more space than we need. The third satellite that came into play was our church was at the time doing a capital campaign. We didn't have any space for Sunday school classes to meet on Sunday morning. We had very little space. We wanted to add on some other things and remodel and so on. Now, Sarah and I were at the very beginning of our careers, so we didn't have, our earning wasn't very high at the time. We really wanted to give to the capital campaign, but we didn't really have much money to do it with. So, first satellite, who Jesus pays attention to in Luke. Second satellite, we bought a house that we had a lot more space. Third satellite, capital campaign. The fourth satellite was that at the time I was volunteering at the Nehemiah House. Now, the Nehemiah House is the homeless shelter in Petoskey. You can see it's a little smaller than the way you think of normally a homeless shelter. There were 12 to 15 people could stay there each night. And I would volunteer on Friday nights, which those of you who know me are like, Friday night, that's date night. But remember, this was BC, before children. So before children, every night is date night, okay? So you don't need to reserve Friday night for date night. And so I'd let the married people go, and I'd hang out in the homeless shelter on Friday nights. So first satellite, Luke and Jesus and Luke. And then the next satellite was we bought a house that we had more space. Capital campaign, Nehemiah House. Now, while I was volunteering at the Nehemiah House, I met a gentleman named Alex. Alex was staying at the Nehemiah House. He was Russian-American. He had a full-time job. He worked at the coin shop downtown Petoskey. He was obviously trustworthy because he's dealing with silver and gold coins every day. Full-time job, hard worker. He was kind of quiet and bookish, I noticed, on Friday nights when I was there. He would generally keep to himself and read a book. In fact, he kept to himself so much that Sarah and I don't have a picture of him. And so I got to thinking, you know what? We have extra room in our house. He's dependable, trustworthy. He's got a full-time job. Well, why don't we invite him to rent a room from us? And you know what? If he rents a room from us, then satellite number three, Capital Campaign, we could tithe our room, because we counted up all the rooms in our house, and guess how many rooms there were? There's 10. I'm not talking about bedrooms, just 10 rooms. We could tithe one of our rooms in our house to the Capital Campaign. You see how all the satellites lined up? It was perfect. Now, it ended up, Alex lived in our house for 15 years. He lived there longer than we did. We lived there for like 6 years, and then we went off to seminary. But Alex lived there for a total of 15 years. In some way, it became more his house. Now, one thing that we realized quite a bit later after we started doing this with Alex and renting a room to him, it was that we were actually not alone. There was actually a whole movement of young Christians in particular who were really feeling dissatisfied with American culture and the way that the church sometimes ignores the poor. And it kind of coalesced around this term, new monasticism, which is a really weird term, I know. Monasticism is like monks and nuns live, you know, they live together, and they monks and nuns usually have a special outreach to the poor and so on. But this wasn't, you know, just single people living celibate lifestyle, but married people with single people living together and sharing their homes with the homeless or those in transition. So we had last week one of the national leaders of this movement, New Monasticism, come and join us. His name is Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove. But another key leader, probably even better known than Jonathan, is a guy named Shay Claiborne. Now, Shay Claiborne is kind of weird in a good way, but I want to introduce you to him. Here's a video of him talking about how his community of friends first began to offer hospitality to share their homes with the poor. Watch and see.
So you said you've learned more from the tears of homeless mothers. Tell me the kinds of things that you learned from them.
Our community began out of a struggle of homeless women and children mainly that did something courageous, and they said, we will not remain invisible. We want people to see the struggle of homelessness. And in fact, in the U.S., the fastest growing homeless population is women and children. And what they did was they moved into an abandoned, vacant, old Catholic church building, and they began living there. And we read about that on our college campus, and the news headline said, "Church Resurrected." And it was the story of these families. But it ended by saying that the Archdiocese, the Catholic Church, had given them an eviction notice of 48 hours. And if they didn't get out, then they could be arrested for trespassing on church property. Boy, and that broke our hearts, you know. And we went down, found that cathedral. And this is the first thing I learned from those families, that on the front of the cathedral, they had hung a banner that said, "How can we worship a homeless man on Sunday and ignore one on Monday?"
So when Sarah and I went off to seminary, we ended up living in a house that was part of the New Monastic movement. It was called the Isaiah House. And here's a picture of some of the folks that lived with us at one point. You'll notice in this picture that there are happy people and sad people. There are little people and big people. There are white people, brown people, black people. There are old people and young people. There are single people and married people. It's quite a diverse group that we lived with there. And for 3 years, it was kind of like living at the local homeless shelter with your small group. Now, some of you right now, especially the introverts among us, are like, you're shrinking into your seat. You're like, but my house is like my quiet space. It's like my retreat from the world. It's like, it's my fortress, and you're invading it with people. Get off my back, Tom, okay? Let me give you some encouragement, okay? One of the verse that the title of the book comes from is from the prophet Zechariah. And Zechariah says this, "Do not despise these small beginnings, these small things. For the Lord rejoices to see the work begin." The Lord rejoices to see the work begin. Sarah and I have had to translate our background and our experience into the suburbs here in Lansing or in Holt. And you're going to have to take what I'm talking about today and translate it into your context. It's not necessarily going to look like the way that Tom and Sarah do it. But we're going to explore some of the ways that it might look like. In fact, some of you, if you think about it, you may be practicing hospitality without knowing it, or you may have done so in community. If you lived in college with roommates, you lived in a kind of community with other people. If you have an adult child who maybe you were a boomer and that child went off to college, but then they boomeranged back home. So you got boomers and boomerangs. Or you might be a boomerang. You're living back at home with your parents. That's a kind of community. Or maybe you have an aging parent who lives with you, or you have had a foster child or an adopted child. My parents adopted my three siblings, and so in that way, I realized growing up that, or when I looked back on it growing up, my family practiced hospitality by inviting these three young kids into the house. In fact, I was 5 years old when we adopted my brother, who is 7, and my sister, who is 3. So I like to say that I'm the firstborn middle child. That's my parents practicing hospitality. Or maybe you have a friend or have had a friend who is in need or in between homes, and so they crashed on your couch for a couple weeks while they were looking for a place to stay. Or some of you I know host foreign exchange students in your home. That's an act of hospitality. Some of you, maybe it's not about your home exactly, but you go to the homeless shelter and you volunteer at Maplewood or the rescue mission, or maybe you even come here and you provide food in the Connection Cafe. Wasn't that great food this morning? I mean, you do the coffee, or you greet at the doors here, and those are all ways that we practice hospitality. Some of you have maybe been recipients of hospitality. I have been. When I first came here to visit with the church before I was the pastor, I stayed with Kathy Brooks for 4 weeks. And Kathy, if you know Kathy, she's practiced hospitality with several people over the years, and I stayed in her basement. She calls it the prophet's room. Sarah was the recipient of hospitality when she was a young child. Her dad went off to seminary, and they didn't have enough money to go to seminary and to live, so they lived with their grandparents for 3 or 4 years while her dad commuted to seminary. And then when Sarah graduated, she got stuck in this cycle that those of you who are college students, you know this, that you can't get a job without a car, but you can't get a car without a job. You know that you're stuck there, and so you need someone to help you get, like, break through that cycle. Now, I didn't have that challenge when I graduated from college because I got married that same month, and I got married to a woman who had a full-time job and health insurance and a place to live. So I guess my wife showed me hospitality by marrying me, but that's taking it a little too far. Newsweek did some research on this, and they found that 57 million Americans now live in some sort of multi-generational configuration, and that number's doubled since 1980. In 2012, 36% of all young adults were living with their parents. 10% of all children are growing up with at least one grandparent in the house. How many of you have lived with a grandparent multi-generationally? Yeah, a good number of you, about a third of you. How many of you have lived multi-family in one house? Not necessarily biological family. Yeah, a good number of you too, about a quarter of you. So this isn't that odd, right? Like Tom and Sarah are not really that weird. Unless you're weird with us, right? Along with us, okay? It's good to be in weird company. Throughout this series, we've been looking at statements of practice versus statements of faith. I think they're both important, but statements of, like, what you believe changes you from the inside out, but what you practice changes you from the outside in. And so we're not talking so much about practice of things you don't do, but the things that you do. And the theme chapter for this whole series is Hebrews chapter 13. And I'd encourage you to go home and read it this afternoon. In fact, that's one of the next steps on the back of your connection card that you can say, I'm going to go read Hebrews 13 this afternoon. And you'll find in it a list of practices that will change you from the outside in. Let me walk you through some of those here. Covenantal friendship. The author of Hebrews says, keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. You'll hear me, by the way, say the author of Hebrews, because nobody knows who wrote Hebrews, because the book of Hebrews doesn't claim an author. My favorite theory about who wrote the book of Hebrews is that it was a woman who wrote it, because no one in that day and age would have read something that a woman wrote, so she kept it anonymous so that people would read it. So covenantal friendship, that friendship is something that is like as strong as family. That's why you call each other brothers and sisters in discernment. And that's what Sarah talked about last week. Hospitality, of course. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels. The author of Hebrews is saying, she's saying, you know what? At the Isaiah house, you might have entertained angels there. Another practice is the practice of justice. Continue to remember those in prison as if you were together with them in prison, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves are suffering. That's a strong statement, isn't it? About a practice of justice. Next week, we're going to look at vows. Marriage should be honored by all. That's interesting that it's all single and married people together. Both should honor somehow those vows of whether you're single or a vow of marriage. There's practices of money and stuff. Keep your lives from the love of money and be content with what you have, because God says, listen, I'm going to be with you, whether you got a lot or whether you got a little. I'm not going to forsake you. And that's a key theme through this whole idea of small things. Self-care is another practice that we're gonna wrap the whole series up in a couple of weeks with self-care. It is good for our hearts to be strengthened by grace. When your heart is suffering from depression or anxiety or some other heart disease, so to speak, it's good that God's grace, that we give ourselves time for God's grace to strengthen our hearts and take care of ourselves. That's a practice as well. All right, now here's a doozy, okay? But I can't leave this out because I'm the pastor, all right? You ready? Here we go. Brace yourselves. Have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority. How about that one? Do this so that their work will be a joy, not a burden. Come on, submit to me so that my job is easy, okay? Will you guys do that? Barb, why don't people ever practice this one, okay? Yeah, it's beyond me. Well, that's a whole other sermon for some other time, but of course, the leader has to gain your confidence and has to live in such a way to do so. Okay, that was a little bit of a digression. Not really, but hospitality, let's get back to that. Don't forget to show hospitality to strangers. Now, we see hospitality throughout the whole Bible. If you go back to the Old Testament, you see that hospitality is rooted in God's hospitality to us. The land must not be sold permanently, because the land is mine and you reside in whose land? My land, God says. So if any of you live on land, which I think is probably all of us, then hospitality begins because God has shown you hospitality by letting you live on the land to begin with. All right. Now, the prophet Isaiah takes this a step further, and he says, is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen, to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? There's hospitality. You share your home, or back in that day, perhaps you shared your tent. Now, when we jump to the New Testament, Peter, the first or one of Jesus' closest friends, said, cheerfully share your home with those who need a meal or a place to stay. Cheerfully do it. Sometimes that takes work, doesn't it, to cheerfully share your home. Paul, the first missionary of the church and the author of many of the books of the Bible, was mentoring his protege, Timothy, about leaders in the church, and he said there's some preconditions. If anyone wants to provide leadership in the church, good, but there are preconditions. A leader must be well thought of, committed to his wife, cool and collected, accessible and hospitable. Accessible and hospitable. You got to offer hospitality. Now, Jesus ramps this up quite a bit because he tells this parable. And in the parable, he says, I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. And the people who are talking to said, Lord, well, when did we ever see you a stranger and show you hospitality? And Jesus says, I tell you the truth, when you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you did it. You were doing it to me. So when you invite people into your home, or when a stranger comes to your door, that's Jesus. That's potentially Jesus. Now, Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove, one of the key leaders of New Monasticism, was here last week, and you heard a little bit of him in worship, and many of you joined us for the workshop afterwards. He talked about how the Benedictine monks have this rule where any stranger that comes to the door of a monastery, they have to treat that person as Christ. And so any stranger who shows up as Christ, and this is hard to do, especially if someone keeps showing back up at your door. And so they have this sort of saying where they say, Christ, is that you again? So biblical hospitality is it's more than Martha Stewart entertainment. Now, on some level, like when we practice hospitality in the cafe, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to give you a wow experience with food and drink and that kind of thing. But biblical hospitality is so much more than that. It's about sharing your life with people, sharing your life. And sometimes that's in your home, but other times it's not. But one of the things that I think is a misconception about when you share your home with someone is that there's an assumption that, well, it's my home and I'm going to give something to you. And it's all the giving is from me to you. But I want you to know that actually it a lot of times goes the other way. I told you about Alex. I told you as well, Alex kept to himself. So he kept to himself so much that even though he lived in our house for 15 years, I couldn't find a picture of him because he was just a sort of quiet, kept to himself guy. And when Alex lived with us, for the time that when we lived in our house, he was in charge of shoveling the snow. Which is no small thing to do in Petoskey. He kept our sidewalks clear and our steps. Alex ate dinner with us each night. That was when he first moved in. We said, listen, we don't want to just be housemates. We want to build some community. So we'd like to share a meal each night with you. So he would eat dinner with us each night. And then when dinner was over, I was the cook at the time, and so he would go to the kitchen and he'd do the dishes and talk with Sarah as they were doing the dishes. Alex was also Russian American. His parents were first generation immigrants. He was second generation immigrant. He still had a very thick Russian accent. Alex introduced us to Russian culture. We would watch Russian movies with him, and we'd have to read the subtitles while he was just listening to the Russian. He loved Russian art, and so we would have these Russian icons around our house. He loved the Russian authors, and so our house was like part Russian-American house, and that was something that he gave to us. Now, when we lived at the Isaiah house in Durham, we had a woman who came to us named Zakia, and you'll see Zakia's at the head of the table. She's all the way at the back there with the Jamaican kind of head thing there. Zakia came to us during the month of Ramadan, and she was a Muslim. We offered hospitality to whoever showed up, whoever needed it. And it was kind of ironic because the month of Ramadan is about fasting, so we learned about fasting from her. But what was ironic about it was that Zakia was a French-trained chef. So boy, when she cooked dinner, it was spectacular. And this is a Thanksgiving meal that we had. I'll never forget the twice baked sage cornbread stuffing that she made. She baked the cornbread in this cast iron skillet. It was sage cornbread, and then she crumbled it all up and put, like, you know, all the stuffing stuff in it. It was spectacular. I'd never had a stuffing like that, and I've never been able to repeat that since. Now, while we were living in Isaiah House as well, one of the young women, Tiana, gave birth, and she invited Sarah into the labor and delivery with her. You don't just invite anybody into labor and delivery, do you? So Sarah was there with her in labor and delivery. Her little son, Jamarian, was born. There's Sarah holding Jamarian. Tiana gave Jamarian the middle name of Isaiah because they lived in the Isaiah House. And so Sarah had the privilege and the benefit of participating with Tiana in that labor and delivery. Now, many of you know, if you know me well, that Sarah and I practice hospitality while we live here. We've had different people who've lived with us, and one of the people who's lived with us on and off for over 4 years is Tabitha. Tabitha attends our church. That's where we first met her, here at our church. Tabitha's kind of stage shy, so I sat down with her last week, and I videotaped an interview with her, and I asked her, what are the benefits that you get from living with us? And I shared some of the benefits that we get. Here's a little part of that interview.
Tell us a little bit about what's it like. What do you get out of this? What's it been like to live with us? What benefit has it been to you?
I'd say the number one benefit for me, no, definitely the number one benefit is trust. I didn't trust people very much.
Huh.
I've had a hard life. And I trusted the Heavenly Father. But people, I know they fail. I fail.
Mm-hmm.
And so to watch you live it day by day in the midst of everything, you were consistent and trustworthy and followed through. And when you messed up, you came back and apologized.
Hmm.
even for things I didn't, I just, you, it was radical.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's for sure.
I don't think I've ever heard you say that before till just now, that something you've gained from this is a trusting people again.
Yes. I talk to one of my very good friends, Luann, about that quite often in some of my small group and other personal ladies at the church. But you're right. It's been a process.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a minute to realize it, actually.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. You said peace, trust, those are two things you get out of it. I think one of the misconceptions that people have about sharing their house with someone is that you would just, that there's just a one way that we're giving to you and that we're not receiving. And there's things that we get out of this as well. Every time we shared our house with someone, we get something out of it.
What have I given
and,
you?
And I think one of the first thing that we always strikes us is friendship.
Yes.
That friendship is something that we get out of it. And there's, C.S. Lewis said one time that three friends are always better than two. There's ways that you pull certain things out of Sarah that I don't pull out of her, and there's things that you pull out of me that Sarah doesn't pull out of me, and there's things you pull out of my kids that I don't pull out of them, and that, all of that, there's a way that you pull pieces and bits and pieces out of us, and that friendship, I think, is something we gain.
I can see that.
And there's gifts that God's given you and your temperament and personality and those things that we wouldn't have if you weren't living here. I think there's another piece that we benefit from that's kind of unique to you is that you have a cleaning business.
Yes.
So that's what you do. You leave the house and you go clean. But then when we go away on vacation, we come back and the house is all clean. Or
parts of it.
We'll notice like even just this past week, we run out of eggs or milk or something, and you see it, and that night there's eggs and milk in the refrigerator, and so it's just another adult paying attention to the needs of the house.
Yes.
That's a benefit that we gain.
It's a joy, actually, to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm focusing on the benefits that you can gain when you share your home or share your life with someone. But I want you to know you may give and give and give, and you may never receive anything, and yet we're still commanded to do it. One time when we were living in the Isaiah House, someone from seminary was talking to Sarah and said, "How's it going?" And Sarah said, "It's hard. I think the only thing that's been harder than living at the Isaiah House was having kids, which is kind of an act of hospitality, right? To invite these little ones into your 13-year no-kid marriage. That was harder than the Isaiah House, but the Isaiah House was number two. And so Sarah said it was hard. It's really hard. And the person said, well, are you going to move out? And Sarah said, no, we're not going to move out just because it's hard, because it's also good. It's also good. So I want to share with you three quick tips on how you might practice hospitality. All right. So if you're considering this, and these are things like whether you're going to share your home with your adult kids, whether you're going to share it with an aging parent, whether you're going to share it with a foster kid, or I mean, on some level, even if you're going to share it in marriage with someone, sharing your life. These are three tips I think that can be helpful to you. The first one is community discernment. You can't offer hospitality to everybody. I mean, our homes are, they only have so much space, right? So the question is, who can you, and is this the right time? Sarah and I have always found that part of the equation that's worked for us is not talking to somebody like that we've never met that's begging on the street corner, but rather someone who's kind of like has a job but is struggling because it's financially it's hard, like in our society, and someone who has like a bigger web of relationships with us, like the church, that community discernment is helpful for us. When we were looking at sharing our home with Alex, you have to be careful who you ask, because like, you know, you ask your family, and your family's always going to tell you this is a stupid idea, or like people who've never done anything. Like, you got to like go to like the Kathy Brooks or the people who are raising their hands earlier, like, and say, you know, that have practiced this, and ask them for help, because everybody else is going to say this is crazy. Why would you share your home with a guy from the homeless shelter? But there were only two people. There were two people who thought the idea was good to share it with Alex. One was the director of the homeless shelter. He thought it was a good idea, and the second was the pastor of the church that Alex was attending at the time. So there were two other crazy people that thought this was a good idea. It turned out to be so. So that's the first tip: is community discernment. Is this the right time and the right place and the right person? The second tip is write out a covenant of commitments. Or sit down. This is like if your kid goes away to college and then comes back, sit down with your adult child and say, okay, here's what we can expect of each other. If you have a friend who's crashing on your bed for a couple weeks, sit down and say, listen, this is what I would hope that you would do, and here's what I would hope that I would do. Again, last week I sat down with Tabitha and I said, what has it been like since we have this covenant that we live together by? And here's her reflections on that.
I think one of the ways that we tried to navigate challenges up front with hospitality is we created a covenant that would describe kind of here's expectations. And when you first moved in, we sat down and we walked through that and we said, is there anything you want to add to this, or is any of this not clear, or are there things that you think are not realistic? And talk a little bit about what it's been like or what it was like to navigate those decisions or expectations with a covenant.
Well, a couple of things come to mind. One, your hospitality. And so what's my part in that? I didn't know that at first. And so I would go back to that covenant and say, where am I in this? What do I do? You know? But even as early as today, ironically, I'm applying to LCC, and I haven't been to school in 27 years. And they said, how do we know you're going to succeed now? Mm-hmm. What are you doing to promote that? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I actually brought up was that I meet with you at least twice a year and go over my accountability of what mm-hmm. I'm doing and where mm-hmm. I'm going with my life. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly what it is to me, accountability. Mm-hmm. And also to make sure that we are on the right page.
Yeah.
the same page because we're so busy with other things. Does that answer your question?
What happens when we break an expectation of yours or you break an expectation of ours? What's that like?
Should I go back? The first time that I recall was when I was just, I'm like, Tom, da-da-da-da-da, and started talking to you. And you turned around and said, not right now. I'm busy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I got awkward. I was like, whoa. Mm-hmm. He's always so nice. What's going on here, you know? And
you met the non-pastoral Pastor Tom.
Right. And Sarah's like, explained how you do your work. How you plan it in your head, and then if there's interruptions, then it's like a stack of cards. It falls down, you have to restack it. And that seemed logical to me. So I was like, okay. But what made me able to deal with any other situation was, and I never forgot this, first thing in the morning, I get up for breakfast, and you said, Tabitha, I owe you an apology. And I'm like, for what? What'd you do? And you said, I was a little abrupt last night. It's not that it wasn't true, but it was my approach to you. Mm-hmm. And I apologize for that. Well, you could do no wrong at that point. Seriously.
Confession as a way of softening everybody's heart.
Write down a covenant when you share your life or share your home with people. What do you expect of each other? The third thing is creative hospitality. Now, I've told you, you know, you've seen how Sarah and I are practicing this with hospitality, sharing our life, sharing our home with people. But that's not necessarily what everyone is called to do. And so there may be some creative ways that you play this out in your own life. You know, a single mom who, if she just had, or a single dad, if he just had a little extra help, life would go so much easier. You know, a child who needs to be mentored in school down at Mount Hope Steam School or in an elementary school near you or high school. Or there's a refugee family that you know who could use some support or just help navigating the culture that they find themselves in. Or maybe you want to practice the art of neighboring, and there's the shut-in that lives down the street from you that you never see anybody visiting, and so you stop in once a week or to have a meal or just to sit down and chat with them. Or maybe you know somebody who, they don't have a car that works. And so if you provided a help to provide transportation to and from work or maybe even to and from church, there are folks, some of you are doing this every single Sunday. You bring a car full of people with you that you've stopped and picked up. Or one of the primary ways that we do this here at our church is in small groups, and you join a small group or you lead a small group. Those are all ways of creative hospitality. Don't get stuck just on thinking, boy, Tom and Sarah, they share their home with people, and that must be how hospitality is practiced. Because you remember what Zechariah said? He said, do not despise the small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work. What? Begin. That's the small thing. So Jesus, help us know how to share our lives with those around us in deep ways, through covenants, through discernment, through creative ways. Help us do that so that we might entertain you in our home someday and have that privilege. In the name of Jesus and the power of the Spirit, all who agreed said, Amen. Amen. Amen.